Good afternoon. My name is Krista, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the McClatchy Second Quarter 2017 Earnings Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Stephanie Zerotti, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Krista, and thank you all for joining us today for our second quarter 2017 earnings call. I'm Stephanie Zerotti, Investor Relations Manager, and I'll be available to answer any follow-up questions you may have after our call this morning. My phone number is 916-321-1931, and you can also find my contact information on our website. This call is being webcast at mcclatchy.com and will be archived for future reference. Our earnings release was issued this morning before the market opened, and I hope you've had a chance to review it. Joining me today is Craig Forman, our President and CEO, our Vice President of Operations, Mark Zeeman, and our Vice President and CFO, Elaine Lindstrom. This conference call will contain forward-looking statements that are subject to risks and uncertainties that are described in our SEC filings. Actual results may differ materially from those described during the call. Also, non-GAAP amounts discussed this morning are reconciled to the most directly comparable GAAP measures and are scheduled posted on our website or in the body of our press release. Now, I'll turn the call over to Craig Forman.
Thank you, Stephanie. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. We have had a productive second quarter here at McClatchy, my first full quarter as CEO, and I would like to begin this call by reviewing some significant progress we're making as we accelerate the pace and cadence of our digital transition, as well as updating you all on a few of the initiatives we have implemented during the quarter. We have found productivity improvements and have released more new digital products in the past 6 months than in the prior 18 months. We have successfully found cost savings as we transition and run the business more efficiently and digitally. We are developing new ways to manage expenses to our revenue in order to stabilize our results over time. Here are some milestones of progress. The sequential, nearly 7 percentage point improvement in our quarterly adjusted EBITDA decline rate, though we continue to be unsatisfied by the absolute level of the EBITDA decline. The growth in our digital subscribers to more than 91,000, in a quarter where we changed our overall publishing and subscription technology platform, an engineering effort akin to an airline changing its entire reservations, loyalty, and operation system with minimal impact on the flight line, and further growth in our unique visitor and other audience and engagement metrics. These key performance indicators underscore trends that are headed in the right direction. In May, we regionalized our publisher structure, consolidating oversight in several markets. This organization change has created efficiencies in the business, as well as cost savings, which were realized for a portion of the second quarter. This means we should see even greater cost savings in the quarters to come. I mentioned our new audience management platform that launched April 24th, and the results have been very promising. Typically, with the rollout of new technology, disruptions in certain metrics are expected as the public begins to transition to the new platform and acclimate to the new look, options, and delivery of communication. We were fortunate to mitigate potential disruptions and were able to grow our digital-only subscribers at a double-digit rate of nearly 14%. We finished the quarter with digital-only subscribers at 91,000. We will be rolling out new features in the coming quarters that will enable additional revenue-generating strategies that will also drive further audience interaction and subscriber growth. During the second quarter, we began the process of reimagining and realigning our newsrooms for the digital present and future, a project we are calling Newsroom Reinvention. As a reminder, this newsroom reinvention is essentially creating newsrooms that are focused on journalism using digital workflows that reach as broad an audience as possible. We are achieving this by providing digital training and news coverage that will resonate with our readers and fulfill our mission. The newsroom reinvention efforts have begun at many of our markets, and each are at various stages of implementation. Such workflow adaptation will take time. We anticipate the changes to our newsrooms will be about two-thirds complete by the end of this year, and all markets transitioned by the end of the first quarter of 2018. We expect to see constant improvements in our journalism, as well as cost efficiency throughout the year, and continuing into 2018 as the reinvention is implemented at each market. This is a significant change, and I want to thank and acknowledge the entire McClatchy team for taking this challenge on, particularly during this extraordinary time for news in our country. And our news coverage has been paced by many scoops during this quarter, both in the 30 markets that make McClatchy and in our McClatchy Washington, D.C. Bureau, which is increasingly present on the national scene. These efforts, along with our others, are important components both of our continued cost efficiency efforts and, more importantly, are necessary changes in order to allow for our digital transformation that maintains the quality journalism that is our mission. The efforts produced cost savings in the second quarter, contributing to our adjusted operating expense decline of 4.6% compared to the same quarter last year, even while investing in new sales resources for Accelerate and in our markets. Now, I recognize that our organizational changes have been many, and just as technology is fluid, we must be as fluid in order to remain competitive and provide journalism at the speed and in the mediums that our readers demand. We have successfully found cost savings as we transition and begin to run the business more efficiently and digitally. We will manage our expenses to revenue in order to stabilize EBITDA over time. The sequential improvement in our quarterly adjusted EBITDA decline and growth in our digital subscribers and our unique visitors compared to the second quarter of last year are evidence that we are headed in the right direction. Now, I'd like to turn the call over to Elaine to discuss the Career Builder transaction and walk you through the quarterly results in more detail.
Thanks, Greg. I'll begin, as Greg mentioned, by talking about the Career Builder transaction. TechNet completed the strategic review of the business in the second quarter. The current ownership group, made up of TechNet, Tribune Media, and ourselves, entered into a sales agreement with an investor group, which was disclosed in our press release announcing the transaction. The complete terms of the agreement haven't been disclosed, so we can't share every detail. But upon the completion of the sale, McClatchy will retain about a 3.5% interest in Career Builder. Now, there's no specific strategy behind the retention of that portion of interest in CB, but rather it's a consequence of the agreement that was negotiated. As we noted in our press release on June 19th, we'll terminate our affiliate agreement with Career Builder, which expires in normal course on July 31st. Our employment classified advertising category, while much less significant part of our revenue base than it has historically been, will continue through an affiliate agreement with another vendor, which we're finalizing now. The CB sale is expected to close in the next few weeks, and we expect a normal cash distribution of approximately $8 million prior to the close. We typically receive that in the fourth quarter each year. And our portion of the proceeds from the sale are approximately $65 million. The transaction creates a taxable loss for the company, which creates an expected $3 million tax credit, creating total cash inflow of $76 million. The Career Builder transaction is considered an asset sale, and therefore, after-tax proceeds are expected to be offered to the secured bondholders at par shortly after the transaction closes. And now I'll shift to our second quarter results. In the second quarter, the decline in our adjusted EBITDA improved almost 7 percentage points sequentially, and our adjusted EBITDA margin improved 5.4 percentage points from the first quarter of 2017. In the second quarter, total revenues were down 7.1% compared to the same period a year ago. While down, they improved 60 basis points compared to the second quarter of 2016 year-over-year declines, and sequentially were stable with the trend in the first quarter. Revenues exclusive of print advertising now account for about 75% of total revenues in the quarter, an increase of 70% from the first quarter of 2016 as we continue to work toward less reliance on print advertising. Advertising revenues in the second quarter were down 11.1%. That's an improvement sequentially of 90 basis points. And the overall trend improvement reflects improvements in several advertising categories compared to the first quarter of this year. While an overall improvement is welcome, we're still facing the same headwinds of print declines, and specifically print retail advertising, which that was down about 20% in the quarter. We're clear-eyed about what is happening to the brick-and-mortar retail stores, and our future is not based on hopes that print advertising will get better. Rather, our efforts are focused on growing our digital revenues. Our digital-only advertising revenues maintained its double-digit growth for the seventh consecutive quarter, with more growth expected in the second half. In the first half, we had tough comps in digital-only advertising. Looking back to our second quarter and first half of 2016, our digital-only growth was 16.1% in the quarter and 17% in the half to better quantify the comparisons that we were facing in this year's period. Direct marketing declined 1.8% compared to a decline of 13.2% in the second quarter of last year and reflects relatively stable results compared to the first quarter of this year. The improvement has mainly been attributable to new customers in the second half of last year at several of our markets and the impact of rolling over the elimination of certain products during 2016. Our audience total revenues declined slightly at about 0.5% in the quarter, and Mark will speak to those audience results shortly. Finally, in the second quarter, we reported a GAAP net loss of $37.4 million and an adjusted net loss of $6.1 million. Our GAAP results included an after-tax non-cash impairment of $28.8 million on the carrying value of our interest in CB and some smaller equity investments. Now let me turn the call over to Mark to provide an update on our advertising and audience strategies.
Thank you, Elaine. Let me start by discussing our digital-only revenue, which grew 10% in the second quarter compared to the same period last year. As Elaine mentioned, the first two quarters of last year showed strong growth in digital-only revenue, so we faced some pretty stiff comps for the first half of 2017. Still, we were able to continue our trend of double-digit growth for the seventh consecutive quarter. In the second quarter, our digital advertising represented 34.3% of our total advertising revenue, up from 30.8% in the same quarter last year. So combined with direct marketing, that means more than half of our advertising revenue is no longer connected to our daily print product. We remain focused on growing our digital revenue as much and as quickly as possible. Accelerate is still being rolled out across the company, but also expanding into several cities outside of our core McClatchy markets. We have seen our Accelerate contracts double in revenue in the second quarter versus the first quarter, and that pace is continuing. The brands we now manage also have doubled to more than 80 currently. As a reminder, these are mostly new customers, so it's real revenue growth for the company. Our growth in digital-only advertising revenue in the quarter continues to come from our digital agency services, such as search engine marketing, reputation management, and email marketing. To a lesser extent, we're also seeing continued growth in the more traditional parts of our business, such as our display ads. And once again, programmatic was a highlight for us in Q2, representing close to 68% of our national digital-only revenue and up nearly 33% from the second quarter of last year. In the second quarter, we introduced header bidding into our programmatic sales, along with other technology improvements that helped increase our programmatic CPMs by more than 20%. Of course, going forward, these rates will fluctuate with supply and demand, but we do expect higher average CPMs for our programmatic advertising as we move through the year. Video continues to do well for us. We are cycling over the rollout of our video player last year at all of our markets, so we aren't seeing the startup level growth that we saw over the last 2 years, but we are continuing to improve our ability to monetize those views. We've also introduced new video advertising units and are seeing continued pickup in demand from advertisers for our brand content studio. Our video views across all of our platforms reached 64 million in the second quarter, up about 4% from last year, but our video revenue grew 43%. We announced earlier this year that we would be expanding our video efforts by launching Video Lab West to advance immersive storytelling with the use of virtual reality and augmented reality, and that work is getting underway even before the facility is built. We're continuing to engage in technology relationships with Google, YouTube, and others in Silicon Valley, so we remain focused on growing this category further in the future. Now I'll touch on our audience results, where revenues were basically flat for the quarter, or down just 0.6% versus last year. Audience revenue continues to grow in importance for us, and in the second quarter represented about 40% of our total revenue, up from about 37% for the same period last year. We mentioned last quarter that we were launching a new audience management platform, which will help us grow our digital subscribers by providing a better user experience. And in time, the platform also will provide us with richer data to better engage with our subscribers and customize their products, their services, and their subscription offers. We successfully launched the platform in Q2, and we saw our digital-only subscribers reach 91,000, a growth of nearly 14% when compared to the same period last year. Digital-only audience revenues grew to grew 6.7% in the quarter. Audience revenue is amortized over the life of the subscription, so we'll see more revenue impact in the months ahead from those new subscriptions. Total page views grew 9.4% to 922 million in the second quarter compared to the same period last year. Total average unique visitors grew 14.6% to 66 million compared to the same quarter last year. And our local unique visitors grew 10.7% over the same period. So overall, we saw strong double-digit growth this past quarter in both our digital subscribers and our online visitors. And now, I guess I'll turn it back to Elaine to complete the review of our second quarter results.
Okay. As Craig mentioned at the start of this call, legacy cost reduction efforts are ongoing. In fact, we saw a 4.6% reduction in our adjusted operating expenses compared to the second quarter of 2016. And as you can see from our press release tables, those are primarily coming from compensation and newsprint. The expense savings that we're seeing are the results of changes that we've made to our business and operations to further embrace the transition to a digital media company, and they've allowed us to move forward in being more efficient in our operations. The cost reduction efforts should yield larger impacts in the coming quarter. And again, as Craig mentioned, moving to a regional publisher structure and the centralization of our audience functions were completed during the second quarter. The newsroom reinvention is still underway and will be rolled out through the first quarter of 2018, with only about a third of our markets in various stages of the reinvention process this quarter. We remain equally focused on our capital structure and building returns to shareholders. In the second quarter, we repurchased $15 million of debt using cash flows from operations. On March 31st, we completed the sale of San Luis Obispo, California building and land for $9 million. The sale of our land and building in Sacramento, California is expected to close this quarter. The Sacramento property transaction, as we've mentioned before, will be a sale-leaseback transaction. Shortly after closing, we'll likely offer the after-tax proceeds to our 9% bondholders at par. We've now entered into purchase agreements to sell the Kansas City, Missouri downtown office facility, which will be an outright sale, and the production facility, which will be structured as a sales leaseback transaction. Together, these two transactions would provide combined gross proceeds of $42 million and are expected to close in the third and fourth quarters, subject to customary closing conditions. Of the three sale leaseback transactions that we disclosed late last year, the last property is Columbia, South Carolina land and building, and currently that is under a non-binding LOI, which was entered into the second quarter. We'll hopefully go into contract on that and be able to close in the fourth quarter of 17, if not early 2018. We ended the quarter with cash of $8.4 million of debt of about $859 million. Our leverage ratio was 5.48 times cash flow as defined in our credit agreement. We have an unused $65 million revolving credit facility, and the restricted payments basket under our 22 bond indenture was approximately $744 million at the end of the quarter. Our near-term debt due in the third quarter is a very modest $16.9 million, and we have no other maturities until 2022. We remain confident in our ability to manage debt, and we expect the closing of transactions and improved trends in OCF performance to enable us to reduce debt and our leverage ratio in the coming quarters. Finally, our capital expenditures were $3 million in the second quarter and totaled $4.7 million in the first half. And now I'll turn it back over to Craig to discuss our outlook for the rest of 2017.
Thanks, Elaine. In the second half, we expect to grow digital-only advertising revenues at a double-digit rate and improve on the trends seen in the first half. We expect to obtain this growth through digital solutions such as Accelerate, as well as our other digital products and partnerships. Expenses are expected to include an investment in Accelerate throughout 2017, providing it with a larger sales force and with additional tools to drive revenue results in our markets, as well as adjacent markets. We also see further potential in our video portfolio, as well as Nucleus, which is expected to help drive results for larger retailers and national accounts. While we remain steadfast in communicating the value of print advertising, the declining trends in print advertising are not anticipated to subside in the remainder of 2017. We believe print advertising will continue to become a smaller portion of advertising and total revenue. Audience revenues are expected to remain stable in 2017. We're committed to reducing operating expenses, and will monitor costs throughout the year to achieve expense performance in line with revenue performance, despite the additional investments we are making in news and sales infrastructure. Strategies to continue our digital transformation and reduce legacy costs include, among others, moving to our regional publisher structure, centralizing some audience functions, consolidating our production and other functions, and reinventing our newsrooms to have a digital-first workflow. These actions will result in initial implementation costs in the range of $18 million to $20 million, which may include accelerated depreciation and certain other non-cash costs. This compares to similar upfront costs of approximately $40 million in 2016 to further digital transformation and continue the reduction of legacy costs. As we have discussed, we expect improving performance in adjusted EBITDA compared to the level of decline in the first half of 2017. As Elaine said, we also remain focused on monetizing real estate assets throughout the year, with the goal of realizing approximately $100 million in proceeds this year. The proceeds achieved from the real estate transactions, coupled with the proceeds from other asset sales and cash from operations, will be used to delever the company through debt reduction and to further invest in our business. Now we'd like to open up the call so that we can answer your questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your touch-tone phone. Your first question comes from the line of Avi Steiner with J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Thank you, and good afternoon on our side. A few questions here. First off, top line. You had mentioned print trends will remain challenged, and obviously the retail piece clearly so. But is there anything you see on the horizon that maybe gives you comfort that you can arrest these revenue declines away from some of your existing and newer digital strategies?
Well, Avi, it's Craig. Thanks for the question. I'll answer first and then throw it over to Mark to talk about some of the investments we've been making. We don't need to spend a lot of time on the well-known macro trends affecting some of the sectors that have been important to this industry. Whether it's retail or others, or the secular decline on the print side of the industry either. I think we would focus on where we're seeing growth, and that includes not only Accelerate, and I draw your attention to our penetration in our markets, the 30 that make up McClatchy, and some adjacent geographies, which are a new opportunity for the company. We can talk a little bit about what we're doing there. In some locations, such as Georgia, the state of Georgia, where, as you know, Avi, we have strong properties in Macon and Columbus, but are starting to be able to offer digital advertising in some larger markets where we may not operate a news organization. And Nucleus, which we're an equity partner in and which offers a digital programmatic solution to national advertisers across the very valuable inventory that's represented by branded news providers. In an era where trying to find audiences that have strong affinity to strong brands and great credibility, Nucleus offers a solution that for the first time brings all those opportunities together in a very easy to use platform. Mark, you might want to add a word or two on both of those initiatives.
Yeah, and I would also add to that that, as Craig said, even though we're not expecting print to rebound, it is worth noting that, in the last part of last year and throughout the first half of this year, we experienced declines in print advertising similar to the trend we saw at the beginning of the recession. And the difference is that in 2017, our total advertising revenue dropped only half as much as it did 8 years ago, because of the substantial growth in digital revenue and the new products and services we're selling that Craig has mentioned, and also the small reliance on print. So the math only gets better as our digital revenues increase, and that's why we're focused on that. And, beyond Accelerate that we've talked about, our programmatic revenue, where we now rolled out header bidding and other things, continues to be very strong and is currently yielding higher rates than what we have historically seen in that space. We've also seen strong growth trends that are continuing for video and branded content and national revenue. And that has also helped us on our partnership with Nucleus, which is focused on those areas. So that digital mix is diversified and growing. And we've also significantly boosted our social media presence, which has led to our strong growth and unique visitors, and in turn that growth has expanded our digital inventory, and that's helped us grow our digital revenue too. So a lot of investments that we're making that are continuing to pay off with strong growth on the digital side to offset the print.
So Avi, just to bring it home here, it's Craig again. I just highlight, as Mark said, the model is increasingly less sensitive solely to print. And I draw your attention to a trend to focus on, which is the curve around the stabilization of operating cash flow and the 7 percentage point slowing of the operating cash flow decline rate is an important metric to keep an eye on.
That's helpful. And if I could just have a follow-up on that one or on this topic, that you're kind of running these dual models, digital and print, and I don't know if we could talk about it in isolation, but is the digital revenue higher or lower margin relative to print?
It really depends on whether or not you're including fixed costs. Yeah. I guess on a variable basis in terms of every incremental dollar, I would say digital is more profitable. A lot of it depends upon the category, clearly.
But
that's not to say that print isn't continuing to be profitable for us. And while we are working hard to reduce fixed costs through outsourcing and other models, and that is working, I would say that digital is pretty profitable.
Avi, another thing to bear in mind is in these digital transitions that we all have seen, and I've seen personally in a number of contexts, the transition takes a number of quarters to get to a normalized operating environment. You know, part of the reason why it's challenging to answer that question in a black and white fashion is we're investing ahead of the revenue return and the margin return in some of our digital activities. And so, it's hard to draw a straight line at any given quarter and say, hey, at a normalized moment, how would you look at this? And so that's the reason why Elaine provided sort of a nuanced answer there.
Fair enough. And if I could stick on the expenses theme, Elena, I couldn't hear you candidly towards the end of your prepared remarks, but I want to make sure I did catch that you said expenses should yield larger impacts. Are you saying the year-over-year, if I heard that correctly, that the year-over-year declines in cash costs will be greater than they were in the first half? I want to make sure I understood that correctly. And on the regional sharing, again, I couldn't hear it entirely clearly. This could be my end, but of the 30 markets you're in, how many more opportunities do you have, or will everything be rolled out by the beginning of 18?
Sure. So first off, what I pointed out was that the things that we implemented in the first quarter, things like the centralization of audience, the newsroom reinvention, which is continuing to roll out, and moving to the publisher regional publisher group, will have greater impacts in the second half. Now, we are rolling over some efforts that were made in 2016, and we benefited from those in the first half, and so that we'll have some comparisons to that. So I'm not predicting that expense savings are necessarily going to be greater, but a lot depends upon what's happening also with revenues in our markets. And we have committed to doing what we need to do to manage expenses in light of revenues, and we'll continue to do that. So projecting expense savings is as difficult as it is projecting revenue results. And we think it's important that our expense savings match that. I think what we did say is that we expect overall that the trend in EBITDA will improve. That will come from a combination of continued strong growth in digital and expense management primarily. And it's difficult for me to tell you today which of those will have a greater impact on OCF as we move through the quarters.
Understood. I want to go to CareerBuilder quickly if I can.
Certainly.
I think you touched on this, but any impact to revenue and EBITDA from the sale once it closes, as we kind of think about our own models, and or otherwise, should we expect that to be offset by the new partnership? I think you said you were in the process of signing. And relatedly to CareerBuilder, does the $8 million distribution from CB count under the credit agreement and indenture for purposes of the EBITDA definition?
Sure. It certainly counts for the EBITDA definition under the bank, under the indenture. It's a little bit more nuanced. To the extent that we've received EBITDA through earnings of CB, we get to count the $8 million in the indenture calculation. As it relates to, and I'm trying to answer these questions as I recall them, as it relates to revenues, we will obviously lose the CB revenues. We will gain the revenues from the new vendor that we're looking to sign. There may be some timing differences in that, but over time, we don't think that we'll lose revenues. There will be some process going through kind of closing down off of CB and ramping up the other vendor, but I don't think that will be material.
Okay, and I'll end it on the – I'm sorry, I'll end this on the just asset sale balance sheet front if I can. On
sure.
The target for $100 million in gross proceeds on the real estate side, Elaine, any sense as to the split between sale-leaseback and outright sales at this point? That's one. Two, can you remind us, or maybe tell us, if no one takes the asset sale offer for the CB proceeds, how you think about what you want to do with those proceeds with respect to the options you have with your balance sheet? And thanks for the time, folks.
Absolutely. I would say that a majority of the proceeds are likely to come from sales leasebacks, reflecting the fact that Sacramento and the Kansas City printing are two of the larger projects. Having said that, there will be proceeds coming in, we expect, from closing the sale on the Raleigh building, which is an outright sale, and the Kansas City building, which is an outright sale. So I would say a majority of it, and it's hard to kind of quantify what that is. It depends on some of these may close in the third and some in the fourth quarter, but a majority will come from sales leasebacks. Those are just larger transactions than the outright sales that we have. As it relates to the CB, the timing of that overlaps a little bit with the timing of selling and closing, we hope, on the Sacramento sale. And so it may be because we are required to reduce debt equal to the attributable debt for the sale leaseback of Sacramento, that some of those proceeds would be used to make that those repurchases. We also, please recall, that we have $16.9 million maturing in September, and so clearly we will pay off the 17 debt. And then after that, we will look at whether or not it makes sense to do anything more with those proceeds or to hold those proceeds on our balance sheet for a period of time or make other investments in the company.
I will turn it over. Thanks, Beth.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Kupinski with Noble Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the questions. And you guys amaze me at how well you're managing your cash flows. You'll overachieve my expectations again. A couple of quick questions. Most of those have been answered by the previous caller. Regarding your digital employment advertising, and I just want to go back to this career builder thing one more time, and just for clarification, was the fact that that number was down quite meaningfully, and I was wondering if that was affected by the changes. In other words, were you already telecast the changes with Career Builder, and maybe that there was some unwinding of that relationship that may have caused that, or is that purely related to the ad environment?
So, Mike, it's Craig here, and thanks for the note. And let me talk strategically for a second, and then throw it over to Mark to continue. Strategically, I think the thing to remember about Career Builder is, on the positive side, it was one of those wonderful, long-lasting, let's just label it Internet 1.0 investments, duration of more than a decade, and reflecting the transition of the newspaper industry when it was originally conceived from being solely print classified advertisings to a brand new market, and Career Builder was one of the pioneers. Well, fast forward to 2017, we're now two decades into the revolution created by browser-based internet activity, and on mobile and in local and in many other cases, the entire market for employment advertising has dramatically changed. And the spin, and obviously we remain a shareholder with a small stake in the go-forward NewCo, we remain interested and will continue to be, you know, very much supportive of CareerBuilder's activity and its new capital structure. But this frees us up dramatically to explore all kinds of new ways to monetize employment advertising as we grow. And so I just put that color as a bit of backdrop to talk about the fact it's a transformation of that particular vertical, and we anticipate it remaining a strong vertical for us.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, I mean, Craig mentioned the huge changes in that space over the course of several years from where it used to be, and especially in print, it's been, you know, continuing to decline, and the print revenue is smaller than the digital revenue. So a big drop that we saw in Q2 continued to be from print, and on the digital side, the drop was in digital, what we call digital bundled revenue, which is connected to that print. But if you look at digital-only employment revenue, that actually grew in the second quarter, and that's the category we're focused on moving forward.
Gotcha. And I know that your effort to expand videos was really kind of in earnest last year, and I was just wondering, can you tell me how many videos were launched in this quarter versus a year ago? Or, I mean, how if we look at the metrics, and of course your video advertising, you're monetizing that much better, but I was just wondering, how can we look at, in terms of the content year over year, what are you seeing there?
Yeah, so let me go first. The video views continue to rise, and we did close to 65 million video views in the quarter alone, and that's up in an important fashion from a year earlier. The monetization in video remains super alluring. CPMs are more robust, and we're finding an appeal both in direct sales and in programmatic sales from the kind of advertisers that might not have participated on our platforms prior. And we continue to make that an area of investment. We don't see I don't want to be overly enthusiastic, but we don't see a natural limit to our ability to continue to grow in video, and it's greenfield. You know, the comps is, as you rightly mentioned, Mike, it's a relatively new area for us. And so this is all incremental engagement and incremental monetization in an area that we didn't have before.
But, I mean, in terms of the number of videos, I mean, is there a metric that you can provide on the number versus last year at this time? Or?
Sure. Let me take a run at that. Last year, we published around 61,000 total videos. And in Q2 of this year, don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we published more than 17,000 this year, which was up from about 14,000 of last year. So the full year gives you sort of a sense of how many we're talking about, and somewhere around 17,000 in the quarter. Just as a note, not every one of those videos we shot ourselves. Some were aggregated or curated, you know, from other sources like police videos or something that we reported on, but that's how many we published to our sites.
Gotcha. And then how many of your papers are in the Nucleus network at this point? Are they all in the network?
Well, technically, Nucleus represents the top 30 markets. And so the markets in McClatchy, the markets in McClatchy that are within those top 30 are being actively sold in the Nucleus network, like a Miami or a Sacramento / Modesto. Or Charlotte. And so those are the ones that Nucleus is actively selling. But, you know, the way Nucleus works, if an advertiser wants other markets in McClatchy, Argonaut, or Tegna, it'll sell those as well. So we'll have revenue from Nucleus at many of our markets beyond the largest ones.
Gotcha. Okay. And then given the regionalization of newspapers, and it sounds like you're getting a lot of efficiencies out of that, are there prospects of you swapping papers to improve regionalization in some of your markets? What are you working on any of those fronts? And I was just wondering if you can just give me your thoughts about further consolidation of in around your regionalization efforts.
Mike, it's a fair question to ask, and it's a fair question for us as news people not to answer. You know, the reason why I say that is, sitting where you sit, it's an entirely reasonable question to ask, but we don't comment on, M&A transactions that haven't occurred. I would say, as we've said before, we're thoughtful and we're opportunistic. We are very happy with our geographic distribution. We're in parts of the country that continue to grow ahead of the pace of the national growth rate. And so we believe in our markets, and we're both enthusiastic and proud neighbors of our audience and our advertising customers in those markets. So we like our geographic footprint. And if there are opportunities to enhance that or to change that, we'll look at them on a case-by-case basis.
Gotcha. All right. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Davis Hebert with Wells Fargo. Your line is now open.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking the question. I just wanted to clarify some commentary in the press release on digital audience revenue. I think it said up 6.7%, and then in the table it was down 1%. Could you clarify the difference, please?
Sure. The 6.7% is digital-only revenue, and that's what we were speaking to. The table has includes total digital, and total digital includes digital subscriptions that are bundled with print. And as you can see, our print subscriptions are down, so that has dragged down total digital. But digital-only subscriptions, that is people who only take electronic versions of our dailies, is up. So we were simply breaking out a subsection of total digital.
I see. Okay, thanks for that clarification. And then on the digital advertising side, is Accelerate being reported as part of digital advertising?
Yes.
Yes.
And is that can you provide a percentage of revenue, or if it's material yet or not?
It's growing, but it is not yet material.
Okay. And then in terms of the real estate sales, I think you said in the release, expecting $100 million this year. And if I go back a year or two, I think you had called out $360 million of book value. I mean, I'm just trying to triangulate, how much more is possibly left to go in terms of asset sales as you continue to reduce leverage on the balance sheet.
Sure. First off, I would say that the 360 reflected book value and not proceeds. And so that's an important distinction. And it was to give investors at that time some sense of what was on the books and that sort of thing. Since that time, we have contributed properties to our pension plan that totaled $50 million. And we've sold off smaller pieces of real estate. The bulk of what we have that we are working on includes markets in Sacramento, Columbia, and Kansas City in terms of sales leasebacks, and in terms of outright sales, we have a number of other markets, including Raleigh, Tri-Cities, Lexington, and also Kansas City's office building, and we have some smaller properties beyond that. So, we think that the larger amounts that we are selling off this year, while won't complete all of our monetization of real estate, will be a large majority of it once we get done. That's not to say that our pension plan doesn't continue to sell off some assets as well, and that is helpful to us when it does that. But a majority of what we have to sell, we think that we will complete this year.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. And I know once we're past the small maturity that's left this year, you have some time before 2022. I just wonder if you could help us how you're thinking about the free cash flow trajectory and how sustainable that's going to be between now and 22 when you are able to refinance those bonds.
So it's always our effort to stabilize cash flow over time. We are certainly in a transition period now, and I think if you if you look at McClatchy's results over the last several years, while we have had declining EBITDAs, they have been consistently smaller, and that is important. And I think what's also important about that is that it has coincided with consistent strong growth in digital only and with our consistent ability to continue to reduce legacy costs. So we certainly think that we are on the right track in terms of stabilizing cash flows as we move towards 2022.
Okay, and then I guess nothing lumpy. I know the CapEx guidance you gave for this year, but should we expect any sort of lumpy outflows, you know, over the next couple of years, whether it's CapEx or any other projects of that nature?
Well, we certainly haven't budgeted for 2018 and forward, but I think one of the things that we have been successful at doing is outsourcing production and some of the larger fixed asset types of things. And so we're down to a number of production hubs, if you will. And so there may be some investment in brick and mortar, but that is substantially reduced. So we don't see any large lumpy outflows necessarily for CapEx. It has been on the decline for a number of years, and that is what we expect. Having said that, that means that we've also moved a lot of systems that are hosted systems and that sort of thing, and so often investments in those flow through our operating expenses. We've been able to reduce legacy costs to offset those types of needed investments, but that's likely where those things would come through. So I am not seeing any kinds of big lumpy kinds of outflows. Pension expense pension contributions is an area that is not easily predictable. It's affected often by legislation that allows us to defer and also affected by contributions of things like real estate to the pension plans that allow us to fund the pension plan without using cash. We'll continue to be creative as it relates to that, and we believe that there could be additional legislative relief as we move forward. I know that there are some congressional considerations going on, at least by some senators, to make recommendations that could permanently smooth out pension contributions. That has not yet come to a floor vote. So that's difficult to predict. I can tell you that we don't expect any contributions this year or next year. And going out 3 years in pension is dangerous. So that's kind of where we are. I don't expect large outflows for the next 2 years as I see it, and it's hard to go out beyond that.
Yeah, and let me just add a little word of color here. So as we've always said, and we've certainly said in the past just short of 6 months since I came on the management team as CEO, but in the more than 3 years as a board member before that, speaking personally, McClatchy is a company that's extraordinarily clear-eyed about aligning cost structure with the basic underlying trends of the business. And you can expect that to continue. And continue to see our laser focus on stabilization at the operating cash flow line and continuing to rationalize our capital structure. But thematically, you should also continue to expect us to continue to accelerate the pace and cadence of our digital transition. And I think you're seeing that in our results this year. And I think if you wanted to draw a baseline, you wouldn't expect us to release a four-year rolling long-range outlook on this call, and we won't. But I think if you're looking for thematically how we're going to manage the business, I'd summarize it in that way.
That's really helpful, and that's a good segue to my last question, which on the digital subscriber front, you've seen some nice growth on that side. In your experience, what has been the biggest success factor in converting a free reader to a digital paying customer?
So the an element of critical customer satisfaction and success in the digital environment is to be essential in the lives of our two sets of customers, our audience customer, our neighbors in the 30 markets that make McClatchy, and our advertising customers who look at us as a way of activating their business, making their phones ring, making their storefronts populated, and increasing their effectiveness in the community. So strategically, digital products that do that convert at a higher rate than digital products that don't. And that plays to our strengths because in local media, we are neighbors that have credibility and brands that have renown and resonance for those two sets of customers.
Yeah, and I guess I the only thing I'd add to that is that, you know, part of it is learning more about your customer and targeting, you know, customized offers and feature sets to those folks to make it more, to make the experience more relevant. And that's what we're trying to do with the rollout of our new platform and the continued improvements on the technology side. You know, we right now with the rollout in this past quarter, it certainly was a better user experience for our readers, had a more modern look and feel, gives us the ability to update and change our offers constantly and instantly across all of our markets. So it was a plus. But over time, we hope to do much more than that. We intend to offer more customized subscription models than the monthly and annual options mostly that we have currently. That may include day passes, access to content from multiple markets, premium articles, variations in the frequency of a subscription, special benefits for increased engagement, all kinds of things that can help drive engagement and customer satisfaction and thus revenue.
Okay. Thanks so much for the color. Appreciate it.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your touchtone phone. Your next question comes from the line of Craig Huber with Huber Research Partners. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. Maybe start off, if I could, a little extra detail I appreciate about your national digital advertising growth. You talked a little bit about the programmatic piece of it. It grew nicely, but was there any specific categories you'd want to call out why it was up so strong in the quarter?
Sure. Hold on one second. So on retail and national, our print sales, which are smaller than national digital revenue, were down, but our national digital only, as you point out, grew in the quarter about 13.5%. Programmatic obviously was part of that. We talked about that, and it continued to grow at an impressive clip of about 32%. By category, if you're looking for more specifics, the growth was especially strong in areas such as family and community, personal care, real estate, telecom, internet, law and government. By format in programmatic, we saw strong growth in mobile and video. You know, national grew in double digits, but we're also seeing slower growth as we have begun to roll over some comps, stronger comps from last year. In Q2 of last year, you may recall, probably don't, but we do, that national digital growth was up 32%, so we're rolling over that. You know, outside of programmatic, we did see solid growth in national direct sales from some national retailers, some political advocacy advertising, and some agencies. And part of that is driven by direct sales, part of that's driven by Nucleus, part of that was driven by some national political advertising that we picked up.
And also wanted to ask, within your classified help wanted category, how significant is the Career Builder revenues within that that you book?
Well, I would say that Career Builder is a good portion of it. I don't think we have a breakout in the quarter of how big it is, but we certainly sell advertising beyond just Career Builder and not just in print. Some of it is from general marketing, you know, to others. And so difficult, given that employment has become such a small category, I will have to tell you that we have analyzed it less than other categories. And I can tell you that, as I mentioned earlier, Craig, that we certainly expect, to the extent that that category grows, it will be in digital, and that we are in the process of negotiating agreements with other affiliate providers outside of Career Builder. And so we don't expect that the loss from Career Builder will be material. There will be some transition time, but that category will continue to work with another vendor. So I'm not sure if it matters if the name is CB or somebody else. We'll still be contracting to sell digital employment advertising.
And I also had a similar question for Cars.com's revenue contribution within auto digital for you guys? I guess you had about $5 million of revenues in total there. Is the lion's share of that Cars.com? How would you categorize that, please?
Well, I don't know that we typically break out that level of detail as it relates to our specific categories. We typically don't break out vendors as it relates to that. And so I'm not sure that we want to do that on this call. But I can tell you that the Cars.com sales in the second quarter were consistent with the sales in the first quarter, so we certainly didn't see a drop-off there at all.
Some people outside your company think it might be as high as 80 to 90% of that digital line for you guys, Cars.com contribution. Is it anywhere near that level, I guess, is my main question?
I think we're not going to respond to that.
Okay, fair enough. Let me ask you this. These two sale-leasebacks you've talked about, Kansas City and Sacramento, once they complete, how should we think about the rental expense? How much will that be? You know, it will hit your cost line once they both close on an annual basis?
I think around $8 million on an annual basis with the larger piece in Sacramento.
Okay, and just to be clear, $8 million total. Okay.
$8 million total, and those will go towards reducing a financing obligation that we will also record at the time that we close those leases. And so any P&L impact would be some interest charges.
Okay, and the $100 million of proceeds you're expecting, just to be clear, that's a pre-tax number, correct, for real estate?
That is, yes.
And you alluded to this before, Elaine started to ask this. Once we get to next year, any future real estate sales or sale leasebacks and so forth, it sounds like what's left to do is basically materially lower than, say, $100 million? Don't want to
get
a ballpark.
It is lower than $100 million. It really depends upon timing on when Columbia closes, but it will be lower than $100 million most likely.
Okay. And then have these $18 to $20 million implementation costs, have they started to hit your P&L yet?
Yes, we showed you some in the P&L. If you look at the press release, there's always a schedule in there that reconciles GAAP, non-GAAP, and we pull out those costs in the quarter and the half. So you can see those if you go to page 11 of our press release. They're detailed.
Oh, I see. You're counting those, what I would call one-time items, in that 18
yes,
to 20.
Yes, that's what we're referring to. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay.
And then any comments, this is my last question, I think, or maybe two more. The circulation volume declines seem to be accelerating some, yourself and others out there. Anything you feel you can do to help offset that or to stabilize it at a lower rate of decline?
Well, I don't think that we are resting on our laurels as it relates to marketing the printed portion of our business. But having said that, we also don't expect it to turn around. We recognize that readers' habits have moved on to digital platforms, and it's one of the reasons why we are focused on growing digital subscriptions and focused on things like the new platform that we've rolled out. I would say that, you know, volume declines don't tell the whole story. It also reflects to some extent that our revenues are stable because we have been using an econometric model as it relates to pricing, and so that has allowed us to stabilize revenues. But we think the growth both in advertising and in our audience are focused more in the digital realm than the print realm.
And also, I want to ask you, Elaine, a nitpick question. For your newsprint cost line, what was the percent change year over year for average price for newsprint for you guys, and also the consumption volume percent change, please?
The volume percent change was very similar to the first quarter. It was down 22%. And the price change was quite a bit different. Price was up 2.6% on average. That compares to a price increase of about 10.6% in the first quarter. So we are beginning to roll over the price increases that were implemented during 2016, and that will continue then to contribute to our ability to have newsprint savings as we move into the second half.
I'm sorry, I do have one last question. I apologize. Your retail advertising number, I guess, down for print, down 22% in the quarter. Should I think of that as maybe down almost all of that because of volume and just a little bit because of price? And how would you sort of break that apart? I know it's hard, but...
I would say it's largely volume.
So at least, in your mind, probably at least two-thirds of that was from volume, if you had to ballpark it? I just want to get a sense.
I don't have a ballpark. I just know that it's largely volume.
Okay, very good. Thanks for answering all the questions. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
And your final question comes from the line of Doug Arthur with Huber Research. Your line is now open.
I know it's late in the call, so I'll keep it to one question. Just going back to retail on the digital side, and I know you've talked about Accelerate. As you try to provide digital solutions to these, you know, challenged storefronts, how do you sort of think about the growth in digital retail over the next couple of years? Is that something that could really start to run for you here, or is it more of a flatliner?
Well, Doug, I'll take it first, and then I'll hand it over to Mark. It wouldn't be right for us to speculate on the call about the actual financial trend of it, but I would say that you can look at our investments in platform and in digital and our faster pace and cadence of digital delivery and product development as something that might more meet the demands of digital retail as a sector. Mark alluded to one of the key deliverables is better understanding of our customers. And you could come up with a theory of the case that says as we refine and hone our understanding of customers, that's more ideally suited to the needs of a digital retailer who's also trying to target those customers when and where they're available online, or when and where they may be available in local or in mobile or at a point of presence if things are tied. And so I think if you take a step back strategically, those investments are the kinds of things that make us an increasingly more relevant place for online retail. That's strategically. We're not going to give a forecast here, obviously, about how that may look on a quarterly basis. But table stakes in the digital world includes better understanding of your customers. And I think you can look to us as being an investor in that, largely reflecting our doubling down on the pace and cadence of our digital transition. And, you know, speaking from the background of the last couple decades in Silicon Valley, those sorts of table stakes are critical to having an offering that then meshes up with the needs of online retailers.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining our call today. Again, if there's any further questions, you can go ahead and give me a call today, or we can set up a schedule of a meeting later. Telephone number 916-321-1931. Thank you all, and have a great Friday.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.